May the sacred presence of the one who said he would abide in his teaching be our guide. May we follow his glorious example and tread with unfaltering steps this noble path until we too shall attain enlightenment. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha, prajna, paramita.
Welcome everyone, here and in Zoom land. Before we get going, looks like there's some new faces that are new to me, at least here. I wonder if we could do a round of say your name. And also, is it possible not to sit behind us? If no, it's not possible.
I have to move back a little bit.
Okay.
Great, that's helpful.
Yeah, so could we do a round of introductions?
Yeah. I'm Kyle.
I'm Raju.
I'm Andy. My name's Crystal.
I'm Cole.
I'm Zora.
Can you say that again?
Oh, Zora.
Zora?
Yeah.
Great. Dawn. Welcome here.
Yutong.
Gabe.
Sonia. Sokuchu. And Nanzoom.
Ira.
Might be as good
Kate
as we get.
And Jen. Okay. Right, so we had homework in air quotes, and I wondered if there was anyone who had an opportunity to practice with that, and if so, would you like to report out what happened? Any comments, anything you want to share about the experience of doing the homework?
Do you want to remind the group what the homework was?
Yes, the homework was... the homework was a poem that we asked you to read and read it mindfully and observe what came up. There was some guidance, there were some reflection questions about the poem, and it also invited you to write a few commentary lines about that poem. And so you could either share your experience, or if you want to share, read some of your commentary lines, if you feel like it, that would be good too.
I wrote some
Crystal,
poems.
Yeah, cool.
I didn't really write commentary, but I just wrote some kind of words that came up for me after I read it a few times. I wrote
Would someone read the poem out loud?
Yeah. Do you want me to do that too?
Yeah, cool. Okay.
Poem by Izumi Shikibu. Watching the moon at dawn, solitary, mid-sky, I knew myself completely, no part left out. So I wrote vast, clear, vulnerable, and transition.
Nice.
Those were just some words that kind of came up for me thinking about watching the moon at dawn. Like if you're watching the moon go down and the day is beginning, you're in a transition. Okay, that's where I kind of felt with that. And vast and clear, and it just, that's how I feel whenever I look at the sky. It's so vast, and yeah, so that's what stood out for me.
Thank you. That's indeed commentary. Yeah, well, anybody else?
I can share.
Yeah.
So I forgot to bring my homework.
It's okay, it's homework.
Thank you. Forgot to bring my homework, but like off the top of my head. So this was like kind of really positive for me. Also, it was like a little bit painful, but I'll share both sides. So the first week I moved in here, there was a full moon, and I saw it one morning when we woke up super early for meditation, like right out here, and it reminded me of that. So definitely I like that you were talking about transition, because that was like a big transition for me. And yeah, waking up in the morning was like hard, but like it was really positive. And then the other side of this is that like, I don't know, I feel like I, in the past little bit, have kind of like lost my sense of self a little bit. And I thought this was interesting because there's so many like different sides to ourselves, and we have to, we don't have to, but we can choose to accept the sides of ourselves that we don't like, and without them we aren't complete. So I don't know. Like I said, I don't remember exactly what I wrote, but that's kind of, those were some things that came up for me.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Don, are you holding that paper because you're about to read something?
No, but I did read my homework and read it. So. When I read the poem, I had a burst of recognition. A little of the thrill of the beauty and perfection of the moon. Often been struck when viewing the moon, how wonderful it is, but for no reason. It just is. And particularly, at dawn when it's still up there and just so amazing. You had questions about what arises in your body, and that still baffles me. I tried really hard, but there didn't seem to be anything happening in my body. I did, in thinking about that, I felt peaceful and relaxed. And looking at the moon like that, there is a sort of a feeling of wholeness, of being fully present, like, there's something about just looking at the moon that's like, oh, I can be there and not have to be thinking about other stuff or whatever. And that, so that's the part that sort of connected with the knowing myself completely, just fully being there. It's wonderful as it is, not a change of anything. It's similar to the feeling I have when I go to the ocean and stand in, hear the surf and see the surf. Sort of a deep breath.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anyone on Zoom would like to share their experience with the homework? Yes. I see a hand, but I don't see a name. I'm sorry. Is it
Kate?
Kate. Great. Great, Kate. That rhymes. And someone has to unmute somebody.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
It reminded me of being in that, in a similar situation, and feeling just no boundaries and just one with everything. And in that sense, kind of like knowing, not needing any details. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's one of those profound feelings of being one with the universe.
Mm-hmm.
No words needed.
Thank you. Anyone else on Zoom would like to share anything? Nope, not seeing any hands. We'll transition now to the topic of this evening. Hand it over to Zion.
Ta-da! So for people who haven't been here for the last two classes, just a quick recap. This is a class on the seven factors of enlightenment. And the first class we did mindfulness, We did, first class we did overview. Last class we did mindfulness. This class is on investigation. So the seven factors are mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, concentration, tranquility, and equanimity. So that's an overview for people who haven't been here so far. And tonight we're on investigation. Before I start, though, I just wanted to share, I was preparing for this class, and I wanted to like bring in a little bit more background. I wanted to find some things that had been written by the Buddha about investigation. So I went back and kind of read a bunch of compilations of the Pali Canon, and there are all these websites that have these lists that sort the Pali Canon into these different topics. And I just wanted to share that, like there was so much written about these, and it's really kind of exciting and validating for doing this class. So there are like 16, 20 different sutras in the Pali Canon that reference the seven factors. I'm not going to read them all to you, but just to kind of give some background and context that, like, this is actually really important, and the Buddha had a lot to say about this, is I think, kind of affirming. Maybe that's all I'll say about that for now. So diving into investigation for tonight, I'm going to start with what is it? I'm going to read you a couple different definitions so we can get kind of a flavor for what we're talking about tonight. Insight Meditation Center says that as a factor of awakening, investigation is the ability to clearly distinguish the details of that which we are mindful. It is perceiving simple, pragmatic distinctions in our present moment experience. Another author says simply that it's observing cause and effect, causality. Tara Brock, in her website description of her RAIN methodology, which stands for Recognize, Accept, Investigate, and Non-Identification, when she writes about the investigation piece of that, she says, investigation means calling on your natural interest, the desire to know truth, and directing a more focused attention to your present experience. You might ask yourself, what most wants attention? How am I experiencing this in my body? What am I believing, or what does this feeling want from me? Jack Kornfield says that investigation is silent observation of what is happening. And Pia Dasi Thera, who is a Theravadan, American Theravadan monk that we're gonna draw from a lot tonight especially, he says that keen investigation of the Dharma is sharp analytical knowledge of understanding the true nature of all constituent things, animate or inanimate, human or divine. It is seeing things as they really are, seeing things in their proper perspective. So there's kind of a range of definitions, and as I was thinking about these, I feel like basically what they're all saying is that we settle into mindfulness, which we talked about last week, and we see what's there. We see what's arising, and then we see into it, and we see all the things that kind of ride along with whatever's arising. Yeah, Lisa.
I wonder if curiosity would be a fair synonym.
Let's repeat your question.
Sure. Yeah, Lisa wants to know if curiosity would be a fair synonym. I think that curiosity is part and parcel of investigation, part of investigation. But I think that investigation takes it one step further. Why don't we come back to that at the end and see if we can answer it after we've read some of these. That's my gut sense, but I'd like to revisit it after we've had our discussion. So, we talk about mindfulness, and then with investigation, we see what's coming up and what's riding along with that. So what are we believing and thinking about whatever's arising? And then we can also start to investigate the broader truth that might apply. And we're going to spend a little bit of time later talking about the connection between investigation and insight. So as I was kind of looking at these different definitions, I was thinking that there's kind of this continuum with investigation between kind of a gut sense of, you might be able to notice like an expansion or a contraction. So there's this sort of like gut level investigation that happens. And then there's also more analytical, or what I would call sort of a technical approach to investigation. And I think both are, there's kind of a continuum there, and we're going to talk about both. So with this kind of more technical approach with investigation, we're looking at the link between things like physical sensations, mental perceptions, our feelings, and then how we harden our experience into concepts. So an example of this, I do pretty well with like sounds while I'm meditating. They don't bother me too much, but the exception is like anything mechanical. So if I'm at home, especially my dishwasher is really loud, and it just drives me crazy. Like if I'm trying to do a meditation, the dishwasher's on, it's over. So breaking this down, I can think about how the sound is kind of this raw sense. Then I'm using my perception to assign a thingness to the dishwasher. There is a thing, it is my enemy, it is the dishwasher. You know, then I have a feeling that arises, it's annoyance. And then I tell myself, I can't meditate, the dishwasher's on. And that's sort of this mental formation. We also have volition at that point. I have a choice. I can get up and I can close the door and I can kind of feed this the storyline that I have going in my head about my meditation being over, I gotta do something about it, and close the door. Or I can just let it be and let it be neutral. So this is just kind of an example of sort of a Frankenstein blend of like the five aggregates and the five universal mental factors. These are just some concepts that Buddhism has to kind of break down experience in this analytical way. We're not going to get into all of that tonight, but as Sokachi mentioned last class, there are entire bodies of literature in Buddhism that do this. And, you know, I've actually spent some time in retreat kind of breaking down my experience in this way and actually found it really helpful. I'm glad that I don't live there. I'm glad that I don't do that every time. But, you know, I think that that kind of analysis can lead to insight. And it's just one example of how we can use investigation to look at our experience. So in a more immediate or sort of visceral way, you know, I mentioned this sort of gut level, like expansion or contraction. That's kind of another way we can look at investigation in our present moment experience. And this, I think, really relates to our precepts, our ethical practice. I think pretty much every single factor that we talk about in this class, we're going to talk about skillful action, because they all relate. So through investigation, I can start to recognize skillful and unskillful qualities of mind. And then I have a choice of how to act. So I think you're going to hear us say that pretty much every class. Maybe all the factors kind of relate.
So that's the second phrase of the overall definition.
Yeah. So if anyone here has taken the precepts class or is planning to, one thing that we do is we have this practice called recollection, where we think about our day and we let that experience kind of draw through our mind. And we look for these sensations of either kind of like an ick or an ah, and that's investigation. So that's a little bit about what it is. Now I want to talk about how we work with it. So, I don't know, I'm confused. So in another way, I think actually before I get into how we work with it, I think another way to kind of summarize all of these different ways of coming at investigation, sort of that more technical, that more gut level. In both cases, we're asking like, what's actually true in a situation? How much is my own conditioning? Can I actually know what's real? And then, you know, is there a broader dharmic teaching or a broader perspective that can bring me into greater harmony with the situation? So it's basically just becoming extremely familiar with our experience. And, you know, when we start to do this, like, for example, you know, with the dishwasher, the result can be that we stop identifying with this fixed, rigid sort of sense of self. And that we can start to see that our experience is actually just this constantly changing flux of conditions. So that kind of is a good segue into talking about the relationship between investigation and then the Buddhist concept of ignorance and insight, three eyes. But these three concepts really kind of tie together. So I'm going to spend just a little bit of time talking about ignorance from a Buddhist perspective and insight. So one of the original founders of Dharma Ring, Kyogen Karlsen, wrote that ignorance in Buddhism refers to the lack of awareness about the truth of no self. The Princeton Dictionary of Buddhism defines ignorance as a specific moment of unsystematic reflection on things that prompts a volitional action. So if ignorance is this lack of awareness of truth, or an unsystematic reflection, then we can see how investigation offers us a way to meet this with wisdom and a path to insight. So through investigation, we can see how our thoughts don't actually exist. We don't have to buy into them. They're subjective mind states that get hardened but are bound to dissolve. Even what we consider to be our sort of most real experiences, our sights, our sounds, our smell, our taste, and our touch, these are all deeply karmically conditioned. So the result of this kind of knowing and this kind of investigating, as Kakunu talked about in his very relevant talk on Sunday, if you were here, is that we can actually meet our experience with aliveness. So I know I've just said a lot, and we're going to get into it a little more through the activity, but just some things to kind of pique your interest as we think about investigation. The last thing that I want to say about this is in relation to this concept of blind faith that we don't really do, which is kind of exciting. I think that that's really tied into investigation, that we are encouraged to search and explore experience of truth for ourselves. Piedasatera has a really nice quote about this that I want to read briefly. Systematic reflection comes naturally through right mindfulness, and it urges one to discriminate, to reason and investigate. Buddhism is free from compulsion and coercion and does not demand of the follower blind faith. Buddhism, from beginning to end, is open to all those who have eyes to see and minds to understand. The Buddha never endeavored to wring out of his followers blind and submissive faith in him and his teachings. So that is my jam-packed little 15-minute lecture on investigation just to get the thoughts flowing. And let's dive in and talk about it a little bit. What are your questions? What comes up for you hearing all of that?
It's interesting you had mentioned how it kind of goes around to Kakmyo's talk on Sunday, because I kept finding that kept coming up for me. I kept thinking, like, okay, so there's this investigation piece that I'm investigating, and that's when you kind of find that attachment piece in there, and that's when you can kind of work with that and let that go and realize it's an attachment piece. And so this ties in so well.
Yeah. I had actually, like, written my notes before his talk, and I kept going, that's what I was going to say. It's great.
I found his notes lying on the table.
It's the theme of the week. So, yeah, we talked about the concept of ignorance in Buddhism. We talked about how investigation can be a path toward meeting that with wisdom and finding insight. I talked about some of the rigidity of self that can kind of start to break down as we investigate some of these things. What else did I talk about? Those are just some little reminders. Skillful action. Investigation is a way to investigate how we move through our days, how we find harmony or lack of it. We read some definitions.
I have a question for you. When I think about sort of the admonition to investigate. So if something comes up and you look at it, you can investigate. And then I go, what's the first step? what do I start doing? I don't have a magnifying glass. What do I do?
That's a great question. And my section on how to do it didn't really like give you that step by step.
I mean, what do you find yourself doing when you're investigating first? Except I know what the questioner said. He said, well, how's the feeling in your body?
Yeah.
And that's a blank for me. So okay, what's the second step?
Well, you said earlier, you said I felt relaxed. So yeah. I was curious how that, you know, how that was for you, like how that manifested for you.
Well, I think I just imagined that looking at the moon and thinking that it's like, yeah, okay, things dropping away, being relaxed.
Yeah.
I feel that in my body, but I could, I suppose, but I tried.
Yeah. How do you know you're relaxed?
Imagining that, I imagine myself feeling relaxed, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just not fretting about anything, you know, just being okay.
Mm-hmm. But then what next? What's the solution if you don't feel it in your body? Well, I think that points to something to investigate. I don't know if I've answered the great answer to this question yet, though, about, you know, how to do it and taking a stab at that. I mean, I think we talked about it in the context of mindfulness. So kind of what arises out of that mindfulness for you? What's coming up? What are you, what stories, what meanings are you ascribing to the things that are coming up in your mindfulness? That's a really good, rich place to start your investigation. And are those stories true? Can you know that they're true? What other possibility could there be? So, you know, we talked about meeting that kind of in two ways. You can get kind of technical with it, with really noticing those sensations in your body and kind of what happens in your mind after that sensation. And then all of a sudden you're getting up and you're, you know, doing whatever. So there's that whole kind of sequence of things that can happen. Or just on a really gut level, like, you know, do I feel open and expansive right now, or am I shutting down?
We have one, two, three. Remember your number. Because I won't.
Yeah,
oh, that's just... Anne. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it was, and then she was talking.
Okay.
I didn't want to be rude.
Remember your number. One, two, three, four.
Okay, cool. I didn't
Because I won't remember your number.
Well, this is kind of in connection to that, because I was on the same page. Maybe, do you have an example? I think that would be really helpful. Or could we go more into depth with your dishwasher example, maybe?
Yeah.
Something like that?
My thing was an example.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm interested in your feedback. So I was cleaning a house, and I was sort of like narrating my actions before I did it, not consciously, but I was like, now it's time to spray the mirror. Now it's time to wipe the mirror. Now it's time to spray the counter. Now it's time to hate the sink. And then I thought, wait, what? And these sinks are really odd shape that make them hard to clean. And it was just like in my mental checklist of things to do as I was cleaning this bathroom, is just like, time to spray the mirror was, and then I spray the mirror, time to paint the sink. And then I was like, oh, I don't actually have to hate cleaning the sink. I could just clean the sink. And so, and then once I noticed that, I stopped hating cleaning the sink. But it was just like a moment of mindfulness that helped me notice like this emotion arising.
Exactly.
That happened to me while I was meditating today. I was thinking about, I was like, man, I hate surgery. And then I was like, wait, that's a judgment. And I was like, why do I think that? Yeah.
These are all
and
spot
I was,
on.
I
yeah.
Was like, okay, I got you.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything, I mean, that's investigation arising out of mindfulness. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the ones that are harder, I think, are the emotions that are uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't really want to go in there because it's kind of, well, it's painful and scary and, you know, hot and itchy, and you just kind of want to push away from it. So that's the place to expand into, I think. Start with the quote-unquote easier ones, and then, but what do you do when that, how do you investigate an uncomfortable emotion? And everybody has their own way. You know, my personal approach is I literally try to imagine myself just getting closer to it. Like, letting it, I'm going like this. Just letting it, like, really be here and just go. And I say to myself, don't flinch. Don't look away. Like, just get really, and it's not a thinking thing, but and I kind of lean into that. And it's not a thinking investigation, but eventually ideas, thoughts, things do come up, and then there's a calmness. And in the calmness of getting really close, like, don't look away, that's where, I don't know why, but magically, clarity comes up. I'm like, oh, that's what's going on. You know, that's how I do it when it's within emotion. You know, that's the investigation part. And personally, I got in a lot of trouble when I would ask why. Like, why am I feeling this way? There was never an answer of the why. It was through the what. Like, what is that? What is that? I don't know. What is it? Just like that. That's how, kind of, to Don's question, if you don't feel it in your body, if it's in your head and your heart, that may be your way to go. Number three. Or, yeah.
Something that works for me is just like a detective solves a mystery. You start with a question. And from there, I look at the obvious things. So, like, what information do I have that's really apparent that helps me answer this question? And then from there, I try to find clues in between what I already know. So, for example, say I had a bad day, and say I'm crying for some reason at the end of the day. It's like, what happened? Why did I have a bad day? Like, why do I feel this way? I feel terrible. Or like, I'll take it happy. Why do I feel so great today? And then you can start with some really obvious things like, oh, that person was really nice to me, and oh, we had some really good food today, or wow, I got some great exercise, and so those are some like really obvious things. And then if I want to take it even further, I can go like, well, the food was really good today because we had that same recipe that my grandma used to make, you know, or oh, you know, like, it was really especially nice that person was good, like, nice to me because I haven't seen them in a really long time. So you kind of like break it down. So that's something that works for me. Is to start with a question, what's obvious, and then break it down.
Great. Thank you. Number four.
I guess once you break it down into what you know, then maybe things that you don't know will start to come after that. I also think, what was your name again?
Don.
Don?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's super interesting you use like a magnifying glass to talk about investigation, because that's like totally what we think about with investigation, like really getting into like the nitty gritty details. But I don't know, maybe good investigation is the literal opposite. Zooming out and looking at the whole picture. Maybe it's like trying to see what you might not have seen in the first place. And when you zoom out, you can maybe see some details or part of the bigger picture that you weren't seeing when you were so zoomed in. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Did you say
do you prefer what to why? Or was it the other way around?
Yeah, for me, I prefer what, because I'll never know why. You know, why did this happen? Why did they do that? Why did I do this? I've discovered personally I can't answer that.
That's a really solid trend within contemplative practice. That's not just so that you're...
Well, thank you. I did not invent it myself. It's, you know, to do something, you know, the Buddha has said, don't take my word for it. Investigate. Prove it for yourself. So that's my investigation. But, you know, and to this point about coming further out, you know, another helpful question can be from a dharmic perspective, who am I right now? Like, what version, what self is arising? Who is this who's experiencing this? And that gives you that broader perspective. Or, you know, what's arising? You know, so that's the broader way.
And I'm hearing kind of like a, like, check the facts.
So say again?
Like a check the facts. Is that, that's kind of a piece of it as well, right?
Check the facts?
I think so, yeah.
Like, because you were talking about storyline earlier, and then like what here is like actually...
What's actually happening versus the story you've made up about what's happening. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's tricky, a little bit tricky, because, you know, we don't want to get too far into intellectualizing. Like, that's not what investigation is. Although you certainly can apply sort of analysis to your experience, like I was describing. And you can think through the what and feel that. It's less sort of an intellectual activity and more something that's, you know, you can feel it in your body, you can explore it from your heart. So, yeah. I don't know, anything to that, but that's something we've talked about a
lot. Yeah. It's tricky to have this conversation because we can go off into some really rich foundational concepts like impermanence and no self and the truth of suffering, because that's where this is all going to. If you're investigating, that, I mean, the insight that may come would be that this self that feels really localized here and solid actually isn't really, you can't really identify it, and it's it doesn't have an intrinsic selfhood in itself. It's rising and falling, but that goes into a much different conversation. But that's what investigation would lead you to, I think, eventually. Is that...
Yes, I mean, it does, but I would say that before it does, you're going to get the, like, preliminary effects of investigation. So usually we're doing it when there's some issue. It's not just the question, but there's some question that bugs us. You know, there's something, we're experiencing dissatisfaction, so there's tension in this situation. And we go into our experience, we kind of, like, you know, activate mindfulness, realize, hey, there's something here, I need to look more closely. We get quieter, we look more closely, we get more information, and something, like, as that happens, chances are that experience will change, and there will be some release, there will be some relaxing, some releasing, and that is probably enough most of the time.
Mm.
So you could then, like, stay with it, follow it, if you had a lot of time and a good bank of mindfulness, like, momentum behind you, great, and get down to anicca and anatta dukkha. Mm. But in the course of daily life, like on a kind of conversational work level, like, that's probably all you're getting, right? And that's great. That's enough to resolve a lot of churn.
Mm-hmm. There is an immediate just like release to that, like when you can kind of, it feels like it's just landing in something when you can kind of get to that point, I found.
Mm-hmm.
Like recognizing kind of what's going on.
Yeah, there's good stuff to get at all those different angles. You get good stuff out of it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a comment in the chat from Ginkgo.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to this business about this question of why. And I think maybe the problem with the question why is that it's sort of assuming that things shouldn't be that way, you know, that there should be a, you know, like, why am I feeling this way? Is if there's a little bit of a, I shouldn't be feeling this way, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe that's part of why that question doesn't work so much. The way I was hearing Yutone ask the question why was a little bit more factual about, you know, what do you suppose is out there that's making me feel like this? Or, you know, it's a little bit more neutral, perhaps. So the question that always came up for me was how do I do this? Mm-hmm. You know, and that was just as difficult because you can't always just sort of lay it out step by step. Well, first you're going to do this and then you're going to do that. Because it just doesn't, that doesn't seem to work so well for me. I want to know, but if somebody can't, you know, people can't tell me, and or if they do, it doesn't make sense, or I don't know. So sometimes what makes, I mean, I get why saying what makes more sense. What's really going on right now? What's really happening? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm not sure there is a perfect question that works for everybody all the time. It's just mostly a question of looking and noticing as much as you can. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah, good point. I mean, you'll each have your own questions that work for you. You know, you each have your own approach, and test it out.
What are we doing on time? We've got an activity coming up.
Should we move to the activity?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. So we're going to do an activity. Those of you on Zoom should, Kyra will put the link in the chat, and here we'll hand it out. It's got a couple parts.
Ooh, sorry, the old legs. The first part is reading a text and answering some reflection questions. Then you're going to pair up, and then you're going to come back. So we'll give you about 10 minutes to do we've got 10 minutes to do this written. Actually, can you send some that way?
Okay. So, in a minute, you're going to get in pairs. And in the pairs, what you're going to do is just share what happened in the writing experience and also compare, given where you started and where you ended, see if you can compare, were there any shifts in your responses or understanding from before you started reading and until after you read and completed the reflection questions. See if there was any, if you notice any changes in your response and understanding. So break out into pairs, say a little bit about what happened, and then did you notice any shift from before and after? So Kyra will break you, if you're an odd number, it looks like you're an odd number on Zoom, so make a threesome and then a pair. And here it looks like, oh, well, Eddie, are you going to participate? Sure. So then it'll be an odd one group of two, one group of three, and everybody else in pairs. And you'll have 10 minutes, and we'll ring a bell. All right, welcome back, everyone. We'd like to hear about your experience. What patterns might you have noticed in your changing mind states? What would you like to share?
If I could start, I think Zora and I touched on something really important that I think we both identified perfectionism as a pattern in ourselves, and what we kind of talked about is how, like, when you read something like this, at least this is how we kind of felt. It's like you want to, like, come up with some, like, deep meaning. You're like, gotta get some meaning. I gotta do this, and you start trying really hard to come up with something. And then what we kind of talked about was, like, when you're so focused on trying, you kind of have this tunnel vision, and maybe the drive to find meaning can be good, but when you have that tunnel vision, you might be missing out on some things along the way that you're not open enough to see.
Great. Thank you. I think Gabe, you were about to say something.
Yeah. Eton and I are we both read the second poem, and we found that very little of the poem actually stuck in our experience of this activity. And instead just noticing, kind of, especially for me, like, how much I allow myself just to open up to the words, to the activity, to the poem, and kind of the excuses, like, in that second question, how are we likely to bail out an encounter? For me, that was just like, this isn't the time, like, I don't really feel it right here, or, like, I don't really feel like, you know, this space where I can really dive into it or allow myself that quiet or that whatever it is. So just, like, excusing myself from, I think for me it was from, like, there's, like, a bit of, like, pride that I wouldn't let myself just open up into it, admit that I was feeling frustrated, or admit that I was feeling like I didn't get it or didn't like it.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So both of those I'm hearing, like, just kind of seeing habitual response, like seeing these stories that we sort of perpetuate over, you know, like, it sounds like that's something that you're familiar with, that you've seen in other places in your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you both.
I've been made very aware of my impatience lately. I was not even surprised, but I was like, oh, here it is again, like, you know, not even reading the whole thing through, and then having to read it like 8 more times because I didn't read it all the way through the first time. And can I share what you said that I liked? Crystal said something I really liked, which is that, like, if there is, like, a certain line or something that you didn't understand, it's like, oh, well, like, I don't understand it, so it must not be important. And I appreciate that.
That's the most embarrassing thing that I've ever
seen. But that was the deep stuff, you know? That was helpful. Yeah. I did ask you to be a fan. I just said yes. And I relate to it. So I'll throw myself down there.
For those of you on Zoom, in case you can't hear, I think it's correct to say that people are sharing responses that are familiar to them. They're noticing that this is a familiar way that they respond sometimes to certain things. Is that, familiar? Anybody else want to share anything?
Well, I look at the poem and I go, oh, jeez, I'll do number one. Because I totally didn't understand it. And I actually had a problem with that particular perspective. So I still had to deal with something. What happened is, you know, I got through, you know, and I had an argument about it. And then I said to myself, okay, this has been around for thousands of years. I keep repeating it. Everybody tells you this is important. Why don't you reconsider? And so I just went back and looked at it again in a different way and was able to like, oh, okay, yeah, like just like somebody just going along doing their thing, not trying to be like everybody else and not worrying whether they are weird or whatever and just doing their thing. And then how much we love people like that that are just totally authentic in themselves and, you know, they're not copying anybody else. And so then I could see something for that. So that was really helpful. And then I got to have a good partner who knew the rest of the story behind the poem. So I got the poem too.
Great.
I'll leave that to him.
It's like... Oh, I was going to say, it's like when you get the partner that read the chapter and you didn't.
So it is 9 o'clock.
Yeah. So I have one more thing to leave you on that is we're going to wrap up now. I'm going to hand you the homework. But something to think about with that activity is to just encourage you to reflect on what was the mind state before the perfectionism, the sort of, you know, whatever mind state came out. What was your mind state before? That's just something to take home with you to think about. What was that quality of like?
We've got some homework for next week. We're going to pass around.
Go ahead.
Well, next week we're doing two of my favorites, energy and joy. So to prep for that one, we gave you just a reading that we'll discuss a little bit next week.
Do you mean we're going to have coffee at the next meeting?